Hello, my name's Henry Goldstein from Don't Forget the Bubbles. This talk was recorded live at DFTB 17. The wheels are in motion for our next edition, and you can find out more at dftb18.com. Enjoy.
The theme of today's talk is really hope versus reason, and sometimes the almost religious fervour of families and their belief in natural medicines over big pharma medicines versus the lack of evidence that I'm going to show you, the real lack of evidence we've got about how to use these compounds in children with epilepsy. And I think that means that families are perceiving doctors now as being sort of confused and lost in a smoky purple haze, you know, unable to move forward with this. Why aren't you treating my child? And so they're getting on and doing it for themselves. So I'm hoping at the end of the session you'll have, I'll arm you a little bit with some tools to try and counter that. But I think it's a wave that's hard to stop at the moment, particularly in certain parts of northern New South Wales and Queensland. So how do we get here? 5 years ago, if I said I'm going to give a one-year-old cannabis, I'd be deregistered essentially. So we've gone from something from a few years ago, it was just unthinkable, to suddenly, why aren't you doing it? Do it now. You're withholding these important medicines from my child, doctor. A massive change in just a few years. And so we're going to talk briefly about the what led us to this point. And then I'm going to show you the very little evidence that there is. And then the final part of the talk is really how the current laws in Australia, what does that mean for us as prescribers and really a how-to guide and how to prescribe cannabis. This is probably the biggest problem facing us is that, and this not only applies to this issue, but really many issues in medicine, is it's very hard to argue with the internet. And so this is Charlotte Figge, who's really the poster girl. And whenever the thing about these poster children who've had a great success with cannabis is they keep getting recycled. So she gets put up every month. You'll see a new story about her saying the great success, and you do see a theme of the same children being recycled. So Charlotte lived in Colorado, in Denver, Colorado, and had a condition called Dravet syndrome, which is a severe childhood epilepsy. And the family, frustrated, went down to their local cannabis dealer and said, try this high cannabidiol substance. And she had significant improvement. You see pictures like this all over the web. Unfortunately, she still has epilepsy. Of course, she's not cured in any sense. And it's very hard to know exactly how good she is. But certainly, anecdotally, she got better. And we've got children in every state of Australia who've got similar stories. That's the internet. The other important thing, this is enormous business. And so people are talking about it being like banana republics in South America. So companies are buying up great swathes of rainforest, chopping them down and planting cannabis plants. And so so you've got to be very cautious about what's driving this whole process. Not only the broader legalization of marijuana, but this is a multi-billion dollar business driving this. And there's certainly some players in Australia who are part of that. And the other factor is that most people support this. Plenty of surveys would say that medical marijuana is a safe and a useful thing, and why aren't we doing it? And part of that is because a lot of us have got personal experience, and I want everyone just to get, hopefully they all had a drink at lunchtime, so we just need a sample from everybody on the way out. It's not funny. That's what we're going to do. Serious. Just to see how many of you have smoked cannabis in the last few months. But a lot of us have. I haven't. Not last time I had a cup. Which is a lie. I'm not going to say anything else. Not for a while. So it's interesting that extremely well-educated families won't trust me or won't trust you guys, but we'll trust someone like Tony here, who runs one of the biggest distributors of medical cannabis in Australia. And so it's really hard to understand, really, why that is the case. But it's But that one of the issues with homegrown or artisanal cannabis is, well, there are many issues. But when it has been tested, it can contain all sorts of substances. In particular, many of the samples that are collected don't have any cannabis in it at all, and they might just be full alcohol. Things that are labelled as CBD might have loads of tetrahydrocannabinol in it, molds, pesticides, all sorts of contaminants, as you would expect. But don't worry, you can trust him. Look, he's well-meaning. He's a well-meaning fellow, I'm sure, and as many of the people in the area. But it's not the same as a pharmaceutical product. So just taking it back a step, you may know some of this, but the two main, there are hundreds of compounds in the cannabis plant, and that is a problem because as we knock off each one and say it doesn't work, someone's going to say, well, what, have you tried this part? So this story will run for quite a long time. So THC is the stuff that makes us high. It's the major component of the standard cannabis plant. It's the part that makes you high and paranoid. In animal models, for the last 20 years or so, it's been used to see if it can treat epilepsy. And it's in some animal models, it does improve epilepsy, but in some, it can make epilepsy worse. And if you talk to adult doctors who see epilepsy all the time, they'll say many of their patients smoke marijuana. And before this came out, none of them used to say it had any benefit for them. So they were very skeptical that there would be any role for this at all. Importantly, THC, there are clearly some issues in adults, but there are particular issues about increased risk of psychosis, dependence, the gateway drug, and really effects on neurodevelopment completely unknown in children. So as a compound, we're certainly not wanting to use anything like that. But it is being used in a lot of medical cannabis disorders for other reasons, and that's partly because it's quite cheap. So cannabidiol is the main cannabinoid under study at the moment, and it can be present in sort of 1 or 2% of the standard cannabis plant. What people talk about is that the combination, in street cannabis, if you've got something that's very high in THC and low in CBD, then you're more likely to be sort of agitated and paranoid. So CBD is meant to sort of be more of a calming component to standard street cannabis. But when used by itself, when they're asked about it, will say, and in fact, drug users who are asked about the effect on them, they'll say it has no effect at all. They feel nothing. It's got very low addiction potential. So it has been studied for 20 years or so in animal models, and it's shown to be quite effective in a whole range of animal models as an anticonvulsant. That's led to the trials in humans. What we know a bit about short-term effects in animals and in humans, but no one knows about long-term effects, and that's an important message for families as well about that. And also because it's a small component of the cannabis, it's more expensive to you've got to grow a lot more to extract that. So generally, if you're getting any of the government's warehoused cannabis products, anything that's high THC is quite cheap. Anything that's very high in the CBD, which we're looking at for children, is much more expensive. So governments across Australia have been trying to address this, particularly on the eastern seaboard. So New South Wales was a bit of a leader and announced three trials in December 2014, basically put $3 million into three areas: pediatric epilepsy, palliative care, and chemotherapy. And all those trials are up and running to various degrees of success. There's a similar thing happening in Brisbane. They've got a compassionate access scheme for pediatric epilepsy, and Victoria has a scheme where they've just bought enough cannabis for 30 pediatric patients. Other states have done nothing as yet because it costs money. But essentially what we need to do is find a pharmaceutical product, and that's very difficult. And the only one that was very advanced at the time is GW Pharma. Too late, the shares have already gone from 50 cents up to about $5,000 per each, so too late to invest. But essentially what you're getting is still a plant-derived compound, but made to good manufacturing standards, which means that every bottle's got the same amount in it. There's no batch-to-batch variation. They've tested it on gastrostomy tubes. They've tested it on rats and pregnant monkeys and all sorts of things. And so it really is just very much like a standard pharmaceutical product. And so luckily they agreed to supply our initial trials. And that's how it comes. And an interesting mix of, at the moment, it's still got a fair bit of ethanol. They're working on trying to remove that. But it's 98% cannabidiol, a very small amount THC, really negligible. The sesame oil, I wonder what it I haven't tasted, of course. But it's a mix of sesame oil, strawberry, and grass. So I'm not sure what that would taste like. Okay. And so so essentially, we were fortunate enough that, and this has taken a fair bit of money, New South Wales government supported this. We've got now treated about 57 children in New South Wales with drug-resistant epilepsy. And we've just got approved for another 26 doses. So we're just starting to get some of those have been up on it now for nearly 12 months. And I can tell you just a little bit about that, about the outcomes. So the essentially what we tried to do was to, because of the demand is really, if you look at, say, population New South Wales, there's probably, over 1,000 children who might be, getting close to 2,000 children who might have drug-resistant epilepsy. We only had 40 doses, so we had to make it very strict in terms of who could get it. And so that included children who had been hospitalised, had seizures that you couldn't, so frequent that you couldn't count them, and had failed more than 5 medicines. And so one of the problems about the trial is because the patients are so sick, we haven't been able to sort of keep seizure diaries and counts. But the probably the key message has been pretty disappointing. There's out of those 60 or so kids, we've got one who is seizure free, and that's fairly short term. The majority of them have not been helped. The side effects I'll talk to you about a little bit, generally mild and reversible, but still significant. But generally a fairly disappointing result. And I think that's an important message to families, and I've been saying that to families now, that they, if they want to spend a couple of grand a month on buying their own cannabidiol products, I'm really counselling against that, saying that the benefits are very limited at the moment and very small chance of success. But watch this space, because these are open label trials, and so the next sort of phase is a number of trials are being done by GW, and this is the ones that we're involved with in Sydney, looking at tuberous sclerosis and also Dravet syndrome, and they're double blind RCTs, and so there are other compounds, and we're hoping to start this trial early next year in girls with Rett syndrome. Again, looking at their epilepsy, this has been looked at in rat models, and the cannabidivarin has improved the epilepsy of those rats, but also improved their social skills and also some of their motor stereotypies of the rats as well. So it'll be interesting to see if it does that for the children. We'll see there. So this trial is worth having a read of, because it's a landmark study, and it's the just published in May, and it's the first really well-designed double-blind randomized controlled trial of cannabidiol using the Epidiolex product of GW. And so what this used 120 children in US and European centers, and they had a 4-week baseline period versus and then looked at a 14-week double-blind period using a dose of 20 per kilo per day. And the average age of these children was 10 years, and they're a very severe group. Half of them had severe to profound intellectual disability, and the rest had mild to moderate, and pretty amazing seizure frequency. So one of the patients had 1,700, was averaging 1,700 seizures per month. I don't know how they got in, really, because how do you count that? But on average, they're having about 3 or 4 convulsive seizures per week, which is still a lot of convulsive seizures. And the results showed that in that group, in the patients treated, they had a median 40% reduction in their seizures. So that means, for an individual patient, if they're having 10 seizures a month, that dropped down to 6. So that was the average effect. Now, in reality, if that was your child, that's not an enormous benefit. It is a benefit, but not enormous. And if you look at the placebo, there was quite a placebo response as well, on average about a 15% reduction in those who were getting placebo. An important message from this trial is that those who did get benefit got it very quickly. So if there are families who are wanting to trial medicinal cannabis and pay for it themselves, then you could say to them, look, we could give, you know, you could just spend a couple of grand just for the month and see if that is of any benefit, because you should see that benefit fairly quickly. So again, from this trial, and this was an, so if you look at another way of analysing the data was saying how many of them had a more than 50% reduction. And so this is, you know, this shows you that most of the group did not have, did not get a 50% reduction in their seizures. So in the CBD group, about 40% of them had a 50% reduction in seizures. And in the placebo group, one in four got a greater than 50% reduction in seizures. So that was, and three of those patients in the CBD became seizure-free. So again, a large number of the patients were did not get a benefit. And there's a question mark about that group on the CBD. Was it some of the other medicines they were on? That there's a few questions about the data that have not been resolved yet. And so this is the only trial that really has shown the only trial that's been reported so far that's shown a benefit. And I suppose the results are modest, you know, they're not dramatic, but it is a very difficult group. Now to the adverse events, you know, so in the drug trial group, about more than 10% had to withdraw because of adverse events, and those the most common things were gastrointestinal. So a number got diarrhea, vomiting, weight loss, and because of that had to come out of the trial. Sleepiness was very common, particularly if they were also on the drug clobazam, so or frisium, and that's because it's now recognised that the cannabidiol interferes with clobazam and pushes the levels of up very high, and so that can be countered by reducing it or ceasing clobazam. There's a question mark about whether seizures were worsened in a small group. So 11% in the CBD group had a worsening of seizures versus 5% placebo. And the other one just to watch out for in your patients, particularly those who are using either illegal or legal means, is you probably should check their liver function test, because particularly if they're on valproate, because fairly high rates. So anywhere between sort of 5% and 20% of children getting cannabidiol and or cannabis and also on valproate will have high elevations of the liver function test that often can resolve when you stop the valproate. So it certainly is not a miracle, and it's not entirely safe. It behaves like a drug. There are side effects, and they're all short term. We don't know about long term. So over the next 12 months, we'll hear more. There's two Lennox-Gastaut trials, which is severe epilepsy with drop attacks and mixed seizures, and that's going to report over the next 12 months. Another Dravet trial, which we're involved in. And hopefully we'll hear some more. But there's a whole range of trials that are coming out, and we'll get some more information in the next 12 months. But despite all this evidence, will families be satisfied? And look, already, you know, when I think this sort of comes up again, you know, this is big pharma. You know, what we should be using is, you know, homegrown stuff. Those sort of arguments, those naturalistic arguments, which are very hard to counter. And people will say, look, you know, we're using CBD, that's not so good. We should use THCA, or they'll come up with a list of other things. And really, this is just almost a Facebook discussion of anecdotal stuff and pseudoscience, essentially, so very hard to counter. A big concern is its use in other conditions. The autistic spectrum disorder group, you know, they're often very early adopters of new technologies and new treatments, and I'm sure we've got examples of families who are reporting great effects in their autistic children, and with very little evidence so far about that. And a big worry is in chronic pain. That's a major concern. We'll see another epidemic similar to the opioid epidemic. So, look, I'm sorry, I'm blabbering on. So, just to get back to some practical things. So, unfortunately, every couple of months there's some new headline saying that doctors can prescribe, and then you get a call from your patient saying, "Why aren't you prescribing, doc?" And so this has been going on, and supported by the politicians, but also by including the TGA saying, "Look, we've made it easy. Why aren't doctors prescribing?" And one of the problems is it is still very confusing. Some of the major changes mean probably the most recent change is the warehousing of approved products. So meaning that there are a number of products. If you look up the website, the Office of Drug Control can tell you about those products. They're approved, meaning there's a little bit of data to support that they're not very little data to support their any efficacy, but to saying at least that what's written on the bottle is what's in the bottle, and but otherwise it's still your responsibility. And so, look, I'm going to skip because I know time's running short. So this is what you do. So if you do want to prescribe a cannabinoid, you've got to select your patient. So you've got to and this is what you have to justify to the TGA. Essentially, is you're choosing somebody who has got drug, you know, that has failed routine medications and has got severe enough epilepsy. They then have to choose your compound or supplier. That's made a little bit easier by the Office of Drug Control. If you work at a hospital, if you want the hospital to fund that, then you'll have to go to your hospital drug committee. And I'm not aware of that happening so far. It is happening for some of the in palliative care. Hospital drug committees have approved a couple of products for patients in palliative care, but I haven't heard that in childhood epilepsy. If you wanted to prescribe anything that contain anything other than pure cannabidiol, you have to get your local state health department. But if you've got, if you're just prescribing a cannabidiol alone in New South Wales and Queensland, I think most of the others, not every state, but you don't have to get approval from your state health department in most states. So then you just can do an application directly to the TGA, which is the standard category B form, and that's the thing that's most applicable here. And you have to basically contact the company and then write a script, and the company and the script can just go to the private pharmacy, and the company will arrange that once payment is made. Now the payment's the thing that's not ever mentioned. So for an average sort of 20-30 kilo child, sort of getting an average dose of 10 to 20 milligrams per kilo per day, that cost will be something of the order of $2,000 a month to the family. So it really puts it out of the range of most people. When people are bringing stuff in, they're paying something, you know, some of the local suppliers are something around $500 to $1,000 a month. But for the stuff that's sort of TGA approved, that's getting around, you know, well, if you've got a bigger person, you know, it's up to $4,000 a month. So that's probably the major limiting factor, which we've not heard anything about in the media. So who pays? I've done this a couple of times for some basically wealthy and desperate families, and one of those feels it's working, and one was hospitalised soon afterwards and came off, there's a real issue there about patient safety, and also if you're prescribing, your safety in terms of your medical legal liability as well. You know, if you prescribe this, are you acting within a normal framework? Are you seeking appropriate advice? Are you really the right person to do this? And that's a major problem.